The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Markets Podcast. I'm Paul Sweeney, alongside my co-host, Matt Miller.
Every business day, we bring you interviews from CEOs, market pros, and Bloomberg experts, along with essential market-moving news.
Find the Bloomberg Markets Podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and at Bloomberg.com/podcast.
We were talking about the two-year, you know, bonds, and this is your bailiwick, Matt, being a German resident for so many years. But again, the two-year German bond, 42 basis points, down 25 basis points today. Just brutal. So this is perfect timing for our next guest, Pooja Kumra, European rate strategist at TD. Pooja, you look at the European, you know, just the German bond market. What's it telling us today?
Good morning. Yes, it doesn't really think that ECB hiked 50 basis points yesterday. I think what markets are seeing right now is that Europe cannot escape recession. And that has been the thing in the last couple of weeks because we are reading more into weaker data than inflation strength. And even next week when we are going to get the next euro area flash PMIs, I doubt we will sell off that much just because the move is all towards the growth data rather than the inflation data.
I just want to point out that we saw this morning we had more ECB headlines. Kazimir came out and said the September rate hike could be 50 as well. 25, obviously, or 50. So I think that's what moved markets there. But even here in the U.S., Pooja, we've seen massive moves. I mean, Paul and I were just looking at the 10-year. We're down 27 basis points in two sessions. What's going on?
It's been horrible. I think one thing to note, yesterday's price action that we saw across trades were mostly driven by a very poor liquidity. It was, we could see a lot of block trades happening that caused the move. And today's move was primarily with one after the other, we've got weaker data from Euro PMIs to US PMIs. So I think right now, any reaction is anyways getting much more exaggerated because we are heading towards the summer liquidity season. And also markets somehow now know that we are hitting the end of the hiking cycle. They know that we could see maybe a couple of big moves from central bank bankers, but they cannot continue. And that's the kind of message that we got from ECB itself. They have removed forward rate guidance that we had before. They haven't said that they'll be looking for bigger calibrations with respect to rate hikes for September that we had before. So September could either be 25, 50, or 75. And I think if data continues to deteriorate, markets will start even thinking about 25. Markets will think that ECB is actually done with 50. So I think here we will be extremely data dependent and we could see moves being much more exaggerated just because of thin liquidity.
So Pooja, you know, so much news coming out of Europe this week with the ECB and what's going on in Italy. But let's focus just real quickly on Italy here as we have a little bit of the benefit of hindsight here. With Draghi's resignation, how is that viewed within the rates market, the European rates market? It can't be good, but how much of a concern is it?
It is a concern. I think markets will get much more concerned when we hit closer to the election in September 25th. ECB has announced a TPI tool, but first of all, this tool needs to be activated by the member states and comes with a lot of fiscal conditions. So I think no member state would actually be ready to actually use it. It seems more of a namesake tool right now. So I think we did see, I think today's move is more of a positioning-led move, but Italian politics will start actually getting more and more attention as we head closer to this September day. So I would actually continue to stay with the move with respect to wideners in BTP versus Bunz. I'm a bit cautious about the rally that we are seeing today.
All right, Pooja Kumra, thank you so much for joining us. Pooja Kumra, Europeans rates strategist for TD.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Looking at the markets here, just kind of churning here, but we got the S&P down, you know, kind of more or less 20%. We got the fixed income down double digits. When you're looking at corporates or treasuries, I mean, that 60-40 portfolio just got crushed in the first half of the year. I don't know how these people do it for a living. Brent Schuette, he does it for a living. He's a chief investment strategist at Northwestern Mutual. Brent, how do you and your team...
wait, hang on a second, Brent. Paul, you did this for a living for 3 decades.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. I still don't get it.
That's why I'm no longer doing it, probably. Right?
Yes, exactly. That's why I'm on the radio now. Brent, how do you and your teams kind of reset after that brutal first half of 2022?
Yeah, I guess kind of commenting on the stocks and bonds both being down and how that's kind of, I think, shell-shocked many investors, they shouldn't expect that to happen again. And so if I take you back to 1926 and I look at stocks and bonds, there have been 25 periods, 25 annual time horizons in which stocks have been negative since 1926, and bonds were positive in all but four of those. And so you have this weird period of time, beginning of 2022. The other three time periods or four time periods were 1931, the Great Depression, 1946, 1969, and 1973. Besides the Great Depression, the thing that occurred in each and every one of the other ones was high inflation. And this is where we recommend people own commodities, because in those other three time periods that I mentioned, besides the Great Depression and now the beginning of 2022, you've seen commodity prices rise. And so I guess two takeaways from that. One, you need to own some commodities as part of your long allocation. And two, don't expect this to happen back-to-back years, because it hasn't happened. It doesn't mean it can't, but it hasn't happened in the 96 other years.
So are you saying then, Brent, that the 60-40 portfolio is not dead?
It is not dead. I think it's been declared dead about 27 times in my 27-year career. And certainly the beginning part of this year was trying, but I don't think that renders it dead for just because it hasn't worked for 6 or so months.
What about commodities? Retail investors should get that exposure. How do you think actually, pork bellies? trading futures or buying ETFs or a fund? What do you think is the best way for a retail investor to get pork belly's exposure?
Sure. Probably the easiest and most efficient way for them to get it. And I don't think you need a ton of it. You saw what actually happened in the first part of the year, how a little can go a long way. And certainly over longer periods of time, it's not going to return as much as the stock market. They should get that through a diversified exposure to commodities. Perhaps something called the Bloomberg Commodities Index is kind of a decent place to think about funds tied to that. Certainly, it's not as tax efficient as many, but I think as we've seen during recent time periods, when inflation is rising, it certainly helps shelter you from some of the losses that are occurring in your other parts of the portfolio.
You know, Brent, when pros like you say, boy, and particularly the fixed income folks say, we've never seen negative returns in the fixed income markets like we saw in the first half. When I hear stuff like that, I'm like, well, I'm going to go out and buy that stuff. But it's not the same for equities. I mean, we're down 20% in equities. I don't feel like I have to run out and buy equities here. How are you guys thinking about kind of, you know, just maybe valuation, or it can't get any worse, the psychology of the markets?
Yeah, I mean, you've seen horrible sentiment. I know that this week we had the Bank of America survey that everybody's been referencing, but you've seen the American Association of Individual Investors. I believe we've had 8 sub 20% readings, which doesn't occur very often going back to 1987. And most of those have given way to positive future
returns.
That
was Paul's first year, by the way.
Yeah, people's emotions are kind of a contrarian indicator.
Sure.
And so I'm not suggesting it can't get any worse. It certainly could, but I do think the worst is in on the inflation side, which I do think will help alleviate those fears, which are essentially that the economy slows, but inflation doesn't. And I think the reason why the markets handled some of the bad news on the economic side over the past few weeks that we've seen, including today, is because inflation is starting to push lower. I think people are catching on that inflation is being driven lower.
Yeah.
You mentioned agriculture in the beginning. I mean, I talked about commodities. The irony of commodities is now they're falling just a bit, which is actually good for your stock and bond portfolio. But I think it's also good for inflation pushing forward. And I think you're going to see inflation fall,
for
which
sure
will allow the market to grind higher.
The Bloomberg Commodities Index started the year just under 100. It peaked in June at 136, 137. And now we're back down to 117. And it's also been a pretty good month for stocks. I mean, we started the month off at 3,600 and change, I think, on the S&P. And now we're pushing 4,000. Okay, it's a down day, but it's been a good week. When markets fall 20-some percent, Brent, for a retail investor who's got a longer time horizon, isn't it a decent idea to go ahead and at least dollar-cost average in, or am I dated in that thinking?
No, you're not dated. All the old rules of investing still work. The first one that I'd mentioned to people listening in is don't sell when others are. So that even if you don't want to buy, don't sell what you have. But certainly adding to your exposure during downturns is historically proven to be a good thing, and I don't think this time will be any different. You certainly may have to go through some periods of doubt about what you just did, but certainly, you know, I don't think it's going to be a bad idea if you do, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, which hopefully, if you're buying stocks, you have that horizon for those to actually kind of come to fruition.
All right, good stuff. Brent Schuette joins us, Chief Investment Strategist for Northwestern Mutual. You know, he's in Milwaukee. So that it's summertime now. It's probably like 100 degrees there, and it'll be snow on the ground in 2 months.
He's a Chicago guy, though. MBA from University of Chicago.
No, yeah, MBA from Chicago. Those guys work hard. I mean, they're smart. They're all about the numbers. I'm more of a big picture story guy, but, you know, Chicago people, you got to be into this.
I like those freshwater economics. I'm down.
Yeah, exactly. All right, good stuff.
Bruce Levine joins us, CEO of Knight Shares, and we're going to talk first, Bruce, about what that is. I know that for a long time in crypto, it's been a good strategy to buy at the close and sell at the open, or buy on Friday and sell on Monday. Is that a similar idea behind Knight Shares? What's Knight Shares?
Yeah, I think there's some similarity there. Knight Shares is this really, or the Knight Effect, I should say, is this really surprising phenomenon that a very large percentage of the returns of being buy and hold are coming through the night session, and they're coming with substantially less volatility than the daytime session. So from a risk-adjusted basis, it makes a lot of sense to be playing in the night session as compared with the day session.
All right, so what securities in particular have a meaningful night session, if you will?
Yeah, it's interesting. The Knight Effect we found is very broad. In equity markets, it exists around the world. So if you were a Japanese investor who would buy the Japanese close and sell the Japanese open. You'd have good risk-adjusted returns if you were a German investor, same thing. And we find it at the single stock level. But what we've decided to launch is two broad-based indexes that give you this night effect, essentially on the, in the large cap and the small cap space.
So how many ETFs do you think you're going to launch, and how long is this going to take?
Yeah. So just to give you a sense of, you know, kind of what I'm talking about and why we launched these, we were getting returns in the large cap space. Let's say over time, you were getting maybe 75% of the return coming in the night session, and the volatility of that being maybe 55, 60% of buy and hold. So again, nice risk-adjusted returns. We saw something really amazing in small caps where the daytime return on the Russell 2000 over long periods of times was either negative or just about flat. So all of the return was coming in the night session. So the two that we've launched so far are the NSPY. So think of the night SPY. And then the also playing on the ticker of the heavily traded Russell 2 ETF, IWM, or the NIWM. So those are the first two. We have four more in registration, and we'll see what happens over time. But we think it's a really interesting concept that's never been done in ETFs before.
So have these two ETFs, have you launched them? And if so, kind of what's the interest been?
Yeah, so we launched them on June 28th. And I'd say we're getting a really good reception. People are very interested in the concept. They're trying to figure out how to blend them into their portfolios. And, you know, we're just out there telling our story in the dog days of summer, but we're getting a good response.
But do you expect to focus on equities? I mean, I type ETF go, right? And yeah. I can put in night shares. If I leave it on equity, I see these. But then I'm reminded you could be doing bonds, you could be doing commodities, you could be, because of my experience in crypto, I see that it's worked across asset classes.
Yeah, no, it has. So, now it's equities, and part of that is just the operational complexities of actually doing this. So, you know, cryptos, obviously there's no cryptos being traded in ETF format, period, other than the futures. You know, with commodities is a good example where we have looked at it. That's something we might look at. On the bond side, you get some interesting results. On the high yield side, it tends to look a little bit like equities, the kind of returns you get. And sometimes on treasuries, you get the opposite of the night effect, which is when people are going out of the equities to get flat at the end of the day, they're going into treasuries. So we're looking at all that. It's been really interesting.
Are you looking also at crypto, Bruce? I mean, do you have, SEC news alerts on your phone just in case they do approve a crypto ETF?
Not yet, but we're just out there on the equity side. We're starting down the path here, so we will make sure to put that crypto alert on our phone.
It's interesting that in such a difficult year for IPOs, you know, no new issues, and for the market in general, ETF introductions have still been pretty strong this year, right?
They have. I think I heard a stat of about 250 new funds this year. You know, I think what you're seeing is two things. One is most of the innovation in asset management, in my opinion, comes through the ETF structure these days. That seems to be the preferred vehicle for most investors. The second thing you're seeing is you've seen the mutual fund industry really embrace the ETF vehicle. And so you've seen conversions and you've seen some of the traditional folks get into the industry for the first time. So it's driving a lot of product launches.
Took them long enough.
So, Bruce, you were at iShares, BlackRock's collection of ETFs. Give us a sense of just how the ETF space has kind of evolved over time. And is it a good, attractive area to look at today?
It's kind of a duopoly, right? I mean, iShares and Vanguard are the two biggest shops on the street.
They are. And they take in, you know, the lion's share of the money. And they do it in the more traditional ETFs that were launched 25 years ago. You know, I launched actually a number of them. And, you know, if you take the sum of the flows away from them, it's still pretty large numbers. It's still a growth industry. And there's always room for innovation. You have seen some good things happening from some of the smaller firms. And, you know, I expect that it just will continue to be the center of innovation in asset management.
All right, so you have an affinity here. I'm just looking at kind of your CV. You have affinity for Charlottesville, Virginia, University of Virginia undergrad. And then you get the MBA at the Darden School of Business. And I was considering going there. That was my choice between Duke and Virginia. But you know what? The people, Bruce, at Darden, they just work too hard. You guys really work hard at doing that case stuff, right?
Yeah, we used to always lament the fact that the law school, which was right across from us, was always playing softball while we were working on our cases. But I have a great affinity for Charlottesville. Like you said, it's a great place.
You know, I was down there, Matt, for my tour, and they were just telling me how hard they worked. And I was literally getting off a stretch of like 27 days straight work, you know, as an investment banking analyst, scrub analyst. And the last thing I wanted to hear was, we work the hardest.
Yeah.
So I went to Duke and had a phenomenal 2 years. And so, all right, Bruce, thanks so much for joining us. Bruce Levine, CEO of NightShares. I didn't know this night trading thing was a thing.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's amazing if you look at the charts, because you don't expect it to be as successful as it is. And then I guess it would be laborious. Well, from my perspective, maybe the kids could write code for it. But obviously an ETF just makes it easier and keeps the cost down.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
We're going to go to Mandeep Singh because we need to get smart here on these social media names. Snap down 37%. Pinterest down 12%. Twitter also down. So Mandeep Singh, he covers technology for Bloomberg Intelligence. Mandeep, is this some of this weakness we're seeing in some of these smaller social media names? Is it just because they're not players and we need to really wait for the Facebooks and the Googles next week?
Yes, and I think what it shows is that not everything in ad spending is going to be cut. So if companies are looking at their discretionary versus, you know, essential ad spend, so in the discretionary bucket, probably Snap, Pinterest, the smaller social media platforms will fall, as opposed to the non-discretionary where your Google search spend is probably the last thing to be cut. So I think that's what the market is hinting at. But who knows? Maybe Google disappoints as well. It's very unlikely. And, you know, the valuation multiples have compressed a lot in anticipation. So I think even if they report an inline quarter, you are going to see the stock will be up. So, I think a lot is already priced in terms of weakness.
Mandeep, why does Snapchat have the power to move the market? I mean, it's wiped out, I think, $80 billion in social media market cap, but it's not even worth $8 billion itself. And I didn't even really know people still used it. I remember back in the day, the idea was college kids could text each other and it would disappear or something. But is it still like a big deal?
Well, so they still have around 340 million daily active users. So when you start looking at, you know, number of platforms that have got over 300 million daily active users, you can, it's probably, you know, less than 10 at this point of time. So clearly they have that user base. Now their engagement seems to be falling, and part of that has to do with competition from TikTok. But at the same time, the advertisers are pulling back because they just don't seem to get the ROI they were getting before. And that is the big change, because Apple's privacy changes has really hurt the ROI on ad spending for some of these platforms. And I think that is the big change. I mean, does it warrant an $80 billion route in terms of the market cap of all these companies? I don't think so. But clearly, there is a lot of uncertainty around how much those changes would affect the large companies like Alphabet and Meta.
All right. Well, Snap has a market cap of $16.8 billion, so a little bit bigger than that, but nothing relative to the Facebooks and Google. So 30 seconds, Mandeep, what's the key thing we should look for from those big companies next week, Facebook and Google?
Yeah, direct response ads, because those are the ones directly hit by Apple's privacy changes. If Meta can show, you know, even an inline quarter, the estimates have been revised lower by 10%. If they report an inline quarter, I think things will stabilize.
All right, Mandeep, good stuff as always. Appreciate you phoning it in from home. But I see him here. He's here all the time, too. So he's one of those guys.
I have a feeling he also works very hard from home. This is, you know, the debate, right? Do people... are they pretending to work from home, as Elon Musk says, or as we see from Mandeep, are they excelling at
home? They are excelling. And Mandeep is a smart dude, and he's a hard worker. He puts out some great research. You can get it at BI Go. All right, let's get right to our next guest, Dan Murray, CEO and founder of Vertex Software. And I also want to talk to him about what's going on in this great state of Iowa. But we'll get to that in a minute. Hey, Dan, thanks so much for joining us. Tell us what Vertex Software is. What are you guys doing, and kind of what's your outlook?
Well, hey, thanks for having me. So we have cloud-based software that helps manufacturers use 3D and sales service factory and supply chain that helps them increase efficiencies, lower costs, and drive revenue. That's kind of the nutshell. It's kind of like if you think about video games. Video games make heavy use of 3D content. Well, manufacturers have a lot of 3D content that they provide. It's just much more complex, a lot bigger, and it has to be more precise. So we help them leverage that content to get more bang for their buck out of that investment.
So is it like CAD, your own version of AutoCAD?
Well, it's kind of like that, except we're more like Netflix for CAD. So we take their CAD data and we make it easier for them to use it downstream of product development and engineering where they make it, so they can use it and put it in the hands of a salesperson or someone on the factory floor or in the hands of their customers. That historically has been really, really hard to do, and we make that easy and orders of magnitude more cost efficient.
Dan, talk to us about your partnership with John Deere, one of my favorite companies out there.
Mine too, yeah. I mean, we're just so grateful to work with a iconic company like John Deere. They're such innovators. So we help them leverage 3D CAD, like you just said, to see the state of the factory for forecasting and planning, for visualizing equipment function, and for service. Again, that concept of putting 3D in the palm of people's hands on devices that they use today, that, again, has been historically challenging.
So what is the state of U.S. manufacturing like right now, especially with the supply chain issues? Are they getting any better? Chip shortages really bumming me out. Is there an improvement that you see with the partners you work with?
Well, I think just generally what I'm seeing is certainly right now, I think everybody knows demand for goods is weakening. You know, consumers are starting to spend more on service. Labor energy costs are rising, and there are supply chain bottlenecks, as you mentioned. So I think what I'm seeing, and I was just actually on site at one of our customers earlier this week, and I'm just seeing this accelerating need, almost an urgency for automation and distributed collaboration across time zones. They want to shorten the supply chain and be more nimble and flexible. That's really what I see. And the microchip shortage, you hit the nail on the head with that, is we have customers that have equipment parked in parking lots that they're leasing, right, because they don't have the parts to complete the production to deliver the orders. Oh. So, you know.
Man, Dan, do I understand that. You know, I ordered a Chevy Silverado at the beginning of the year, and it is apparently, as far as I can track, built in Mexico, sitting in the lot, waiting for, I think, a window switch chip.
Window.
Yep.
I don't ever need to roll the windows down. I'll take the truck now, thank you very much.
Exactly. Hey, Dan, you know, Matt and I are stuck here in Midtown Manhattan. We have no idea what's going on out in the real world, so we love talking to folks that are out and about doing stuff. You have a bachelor's in mechanical engineering from Iowa State University. How are things in Iowa these days?
Well, you know, I think, you know, generally speaking, I think things are pretty good in Iowa. You know, we have a, you know, state government here that has been really, you know, supportive of, from my world, supportive of innovation. I'm excited about what's going on in Congress right now and support for, you know, kind of diversifying, you know, diversity of investment from National Science Foundation and Department of Energy. I think that's something I've heard a lot of excitement about with this latest bill, just making it possible for people in, you know, more rural states like us to tap into, you know, grant money.
How's the farm economy out there? We've seen big swings in commodity prices that Matt and I like to talk about, but you guys are actually putting the stuff in the ground and taking it out.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, I'm in Iowa, and that's not really my area. I got a lot of friends in ag, but I grew up in kind of science technology and was a child of the early video game generation.
Oh, so. No.
Yeah.
Like what? What are your favorite games?
Oh, gosh. Jeez. Well, I go back all the way back to Atari 2600.
Dude, I was there on the Commodore 64, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I Space Taxi. Too. Yeah.
Oh, you bet. You bet.
Impossible Mission.
Yeah.
All right, Dan. Good stuff. Yeah. We always appreciate checking in with some of these entrepreneurs out there all over the country. Dan Murray's doing it. CEO and founder of Vertex Software. Bring some technology solutions to some industrial companies, and I'm sure that's a big, big plus for a lot of these companies when they can get kind of really step up their tech game. And Dan Murray does that. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Markets Podcast. You can subscribe and listen to interviews at Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you prefer. I'm Matt Miller. I'm on Twitter at MattMiller1973.
And I'm Paul Sweeney. I'm on Twitter at PT Sweeney. Before the podcast, you can always catch us worldwide at Bloomberg Radio.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Osage County, Oklahoma is getting a lot of attention right now. It's the setting of Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon. The movie's based on a book about the 1920s Osage murders, when white men poured into Osage County and killed Osage people for their oil wealth. I'm Rachel Adams Hurd, the host of In Trust, a podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartMedia. For over a year, I was reporting a different story about other ways white people got Osage land and wealth, and how a prominent ranching family in Osage County became one of the biggest landowners here. Their ranching empire was built on land that at the turn of the century was all owned by the Osage Nation. So how'd they get it? Listen to the award-winning podcast, In Trust, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.